You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Hong Kong. I'm sure a lot of you have been to Hong Kong, or at least transited from Hong Kong. The one thing we all know about it is a vertical city. It is as tall as the eye can see. And its history is rather interesting as well. We know that it used to be a British colony. The Hong Kong Crown Colony was in fact founded in 1841, when Britain's Union Jack was raised over Possession Point. And it was at that time a rather unremarkable part of southern China. In fact, the new rulers weren't exactly thrilled with this acquisition. Foreign Secretary Lord Palmerston famously said Hong Kong is a barren rock with nary a house upon it, and that it would never be a mart for trade. And Hong Kong, over the years, has only proven Lord Palmerston wrong. By 1997, when the UK handed back Hong Kong to China, the city already had a population of 6.5 million and growing. Now it's almost 8 million people. And now it is perhaps the most important economic hub of the region, and indeed Asia and the world. Hong Kong was ceded to the United Kingdom by the Qing Empire by way of something called the Treaty of Nanjing. China had been defeated in the First Opium War, and the UK took over Hong Kong from the Qing Empire. That was in 1842. 18 years after that, there was another war when the British assumed control over the Kowloon Peninsula. And in 1898, London agreed to lease the new territories from Beijing for a period of 99 years. 99 years from 1898 was 1997. That was the undoing of British Hong Kong, because that set a timeline for Hong Kong to no longer be in British control. July 1st of 1997 was when the UK ceded control of Hong Kong to China again. Cut to 22 years later, July 1st of 2019 saw protests in Hong Kong. Not just then, but since a few weeks in June, there have been protests going on in Hong Kong. Unless you've been living under a rock, or a barren rock, as Palmerston would have it, or are devoid of internet access, or only watch those inexplicably popular Nagin shows on TV, you will have heard of these massive protests. A million people were protesting, and if a million people had gathered, that means it was probably something important. According to some reports, it was as many as 2 million people, and the population of Hong Kong is about 7.5 million. So almost 1 in 4 citizens of Hong Kong had taken to the streets. On the 1st of July, some of these protesters stormed the city's legislature on the anniversary of the handover of Hong Kong from Britain to China. And yes, now that I realize I mentioned China and protests, you were probably imagining military tanks on the streets, weren't you? No, it wasn't like that. But the protests somewhat alluded to the Tiananmen Square event that we saw all those years ago. These protesters had taken to the streets in order for Hong Kong to not pass an extradition bill. Or in other words, they had taken to the streets, in effect, to protect free speech. The protests did gain worldwide coverage and even led to the odd comparison with the Arab Spring. So, if you only know that there have been protests happening in Hong Kong and know not much else, you have come to the right place. Because on this edition of Digging Deeper with Money Control, we will talk about the barren rock being fertile with protests. All that you need to know about the protests in Hong Kong and the impact of it on the economy. On this edition of Digging Deeper with Money Control, with me, Rakesh Sharma.
The Deep Dive podcast series.
On the 16th of June, news emerged that nearly 2 million people, that's 20 lakh people, or over 25% of the city's population, one in every four people in Hong Kong, participated in a mass peaceful protest against a controversial extradition bill. Protesters demanded the complete withdrawal of the extradition bill, which opponents say threatens the former British colony's tenuous autonomy from Communist Party-ruled China. The largely peaceful crowds showed up in great numbers even after Chief Executive of Hong Kong, Carrie Lam, indefinitely paused efforts to pass the legislation. A top government advisor went so far as to say at the time that there was no chance the debate on the bill would resume given the ardour of the protests. While the Civil Human Rights Front said more than a quarter of the city's 7.5 million residents responded to its call to march, police claimed around 338,000 people joined the protest's main routes during the peak. Either way, the gathering was larger than the march on the 9th of June, when organizers put the number at just more than 1 million and police claimed 240,000 participated. So basically, the police are saying not as many people, the protesters are saying, hell yeah, lots of people. Either way, even if it's 240,000 people or 338,000 people marching, it is still a significant number, and they are protesting, clearly, something important. Let's find out what that is. A week prior to that, on the 9th of June, reports indicated that nearly a million people had marched in protest of the same issue. What is it? A government bill that would open the door to criminal extradition to mainland China. Organizers claimed the turnout was the largest since the successful protest against a 2003 plan to amend national security law, during which time 500,000 people had gathered. The crowd of protesters reflected the varied interests aligned against the extradition bill. It reportedly included teachers, business people, drivers, students, and even young children. The New York Times quoted one protester, Lee Kin Long, as saying, and I quote, "This law is dangerous, and not just for activists. We are not activists. Even as regular citizens, we can't stand to see China eroding away our freedom," unquote. Martin Lee, an activist who helped create Hong Kong's Democratic Party, told the Wall Street Journal, and I quote, "This is the last fight for Hong Kong. The proposal is the most dangerous threat to our freedoms and the way of life since the handover." Unquote. According to Vox, a college student named Karen Chan told the Hong Kong Free Press she wasn't sure the protests would make a difference, but felt she had to try. She said, and I quote, "I know it's difficult to change the mind of the Hong Kong government, but I hope that the protest today can arouse some international concern about it through the power of mass media," unquote. And it certainly has, Karen Chan. While the June 9th march was mostly peaceful, the BBC reported that pepper spray had been used against some protesters. The protesters carried signs calling for the resignation of Chief Executive Carrie Lam, who has advocated for this extradition bill, and the protesters wore white to symbolize light and justice. Some also carried umbrellas, which became a symbol of the Hong Kong's pro-democracy movement during the 2014 protests. And these protests returned again with much extra force a few weeks later, especially on the 1st of July, when many protesters stormed the city legislature and drew graffiti on the walls and engaged in what Carrie Lam called extremely disruptive acts. But let's find out what this extradition is all about. Is it extradition or is it a clampdown? So let's talk about this extradition bill at the center of this turmoil. Hong Kong, as we know, was once a British colony, as I told you earlier. After about 150 years of British rule, the UK handed over control to the People's Republic of China in 1997, July 1st specifically. Until 2047, Hong Kong is supposed to be able to govern itself under a policy known as One Country, Two Systems, meaning that while Hong Kong is still under Chinese sovereignty, it retains its own political and legal systems. That said, China being China, as Vox's Alex Ward reported, the Chinese government has worked to limit Hong Kong's independence. Alex Ward wrote on Vox, and I quote, "At China's direction, the Hong Kong government in recent years has quashed the city's democratic movement, blocked opposition candidates from running for elected office, and put down nearly all protest movements," unquote. So, China is extending its tentacles into what is otherwise a fairly free and independent Hong Kong. The Fugitive Offenders and Mutual Legal Assistance in Criminal Matters Legislation Amendment Bill of 2019, or short for us, the Extradition Bill, was proposed by the Hong Kong government in February of this year. And what does it do? This allows the transfer of fugitives to jurisdictions with which Hong Kong does not have an extradition deal. And these jurisdictions include the mainland, Taiwan, and Macau. This extradition legislation, if passed, would empower officials to decide on a case-by-case basis whether to extradite wanted criminal suspects to stand trial in China itself. If somebody has committed a crime in Hong Kong, whatever the crime might be, including, as China would see, perhaps taking potshots at the government or writing what they might consider, well, anti-national, then that person could be transferred to a jurisdiction like mainland China or Taiwan or Macau. And from these jurisdictions, Hong Kong does not have an extradition deal, so they can't be brought back. So essentially, what these protesters are saying is that this is a clampdown on free speech. The protesters have claimed that such changes would damage Hong Kong's legal independence, and suspects in these cases would not be guaranteed fair trials. Ben Bland, who is a Hong Kong expert at the Lowy Institute in Australia, told Vox, and I quote, "In recent years, the Hong Kong government has disqualified elected lawmakers, banned activists from running for office, prohibited a political party, jailed pro-democracy leaders, expelled a senior foreign journalist, and looked the other way when Beijing kidnapped its adversaries in Hong Kong. Unquote. Some of these are human rights violations and some a serious clampdown on free speech. According to the South China Morning Post, officials claimed that the bill had to be passed as soon as possible so that a murder suspect could be sent to Taiwan. And who is this murder suspect caught in the swirl of all of this? Chan Tong Kai is a 20-year-old man wanted in Taiwan for his girlfriend's murder and was jailed for 29 months in April of this year on related money laundering charges. Now, Hong Kong was unable to send him back to Taiwan because they don't share an extradition agreement with Taiwan. When Hong Kong's extradition accords were being finalized back in 1997, Taiwan and China weren't included because the mainland has a, quote, fundamentally different criminal justice system and because of concerns over the mainland's track record on the protection of fundamental rights. This, according to an April statement by the Hong Kong Bar Association. So basically, Hong Kong is saying mainland China has draconian laws and we do not want suspects here to be tried there because we are not certain that you will give them fair trials. So Chan, this man caught in the swirl of all of this, alleged murderer, could be released as soon as October and be at liberty to flee the city. Opposition to this extradition agreement has snowballed since it was first announced. Domestic and international concerns were expressed about the possibility of politically motivated persecution and unfair trials on the mainland. For example, in just April this year, a few months ago, a Hong Kong court convicted 9 leaders of the 2014 pro-democracy demonstrations, which became popular as the Umbrella Movement, like I told you earlier. Now, the Hong Kong judges arrived at this decision, reportedly under pressure from China to hand down heavy sentences to deter future protests. Jimmy Lai, a local pro-democracy leader and media mogul in Hong Kong, wrote in the Nikkei Asian Review, and I quote, "Hong Kong will just become another Chinese city ruled by the Communist Party." Unquote. And he has good reason for claiming that. The bill would also apply retroactively, meaning thousands of people who may have angered mainland China with a supposed past crime could be at risk of facing trial not in Hong Kong, but in mainland China. And there, the risks of not getting a free trial, as many people have said, are huge. As a result, many fear that the amendments will allow Beijing to target any person in Hong Kong that it wants. Basically, pick and choose people whom China thinks are a threat to the Chinese way of governing. What has the international response been? The Speaker of the US House of Representatives of the Democratic Party, Nancy Pelosi, famous these days, as you might recall, for her sarcastic applause of Donald Trump, strongly condemned the bill and offered support to the protesters. She said the extradition, quote, "chillingly showcases Beijing's brazen willingness to trample over the law to silence dissent and stifle the freedoms of the people of Hong Kong," unquote. She also said it imperiled the safety of the 85,000 Americans living in Hong Kong. Donald Trump, Cheeto Man, in his expressive words said, and I quote, "I'm sure they'll be able to work it out. I hope they're going to be able to work it out with China," unquote. Spoiler alert, they didn't. Meanwhile, British Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt said, and I quote, "upholding the principle of one country, two systems, as set out in the legally binding Sino-British Joint Declaration, is vital to Hong Kong's future success," unquote. Predictably, that ticked off the Chinese. Beijing's foreign ministry spokesman Geng Shuang said no country, organization or person had the right to interfere with China's domestic affairs. He said, and I quote, "China strongly opposes the irresponsible and wrong remarks made by certain individuals in the United States," unquote. I can just picture Pelosi applauding that sentiment in her sarcastic way, and Trump in his Trumpian way of thinking it's not about him. After the 9th June protests, Hong Kong's government moved to release activist Joshua Wong, who was an 18-year-old who was jailed over his role organizing the pro-democracy Occupy protests in 2014. Bloomberg reported that Wong would have been eligible for early release, but it was unclear whether the move was linked to the march. He was later released on the 17th of June. That report also mentioned that when top Carrie Lam advisor and executive council convener Bernard Chan was asked if the bill was essentially dead, he replied, "Yes," he told Bloomberg, and I quote, "the chief executive makes it very clear that this is suspension indefinitely and back to consultation with the public. You know that would take months and months. And since the legislative term ends just next year, there's no chance that the bill will be reintroduced back to the legislature," unquote. Carrie Lam went so far as to even issue a formal apology, which is certainly a climb down from earlier when she had labeled the protests organized riots. The government said in a statement that the chief executive, quote, pledged to adopt a most sincere and humble attitude to accept criticism and make improvements in serving the public, unquote. But the opposition was not convinced. Lawmaker and protest leader Claudia Moore said, and I quote, "The suspension is just a postponement. The plan is just being delayed. It's not the matter of what, it's a matter of when. Carrie Lam has completely lost any credibility among Hong Kong people. She must go," unquote. That might not really alleviate matters. The BBC noted that even if Lam resigned, there would be no guarantee that protesters would be satisfied with whoever replaced her. Under Hong Kong's political system, the leader is elected by a small panel filled with allies of the Beijing government. Then, on the 15th of June, the site where a protester named Marco Leung fell to his death from the area where he had unfurled banners calling on Lam to withdraw the bill became something of a shrine, that site where he fell to his death. The next day, 2 million people, or 338,000 people if you want to believe the police, participated in the historic protest that shook Hong Kong. But matters only worsened. On the 21st of June, protesters laid siege to the police headquarters for 15 hours, demanding a complete withdrawal of the bill and the exoneration of arrested protesters. They pelted the building with eggs while officers maintained a hands-off approach. The next day, hundreds of people gathered in support of the police. They protested the accusations against Hong Kong's force and called for people to respect the men in uniform. You know how the American equivalent is bleeding blue, and how there is a whole movement from essentially right-wing conservative people that the police people are the victims here in case of altercations with members of the African-American community, and that anybody who said Black Lives Matter should say All Lives Matter, etc., etc. It is the parallel here, except in Hong Kong. 4 days later, around 1,500 protesters marched to 19 G20 country embassies to deliver letters that urged governments to speak about Hong Kong matters at the upcoming G20 summit in Japan. Their request to each country's government was to support the full withdrawal of this extradition bill and the establishment of an investigation committee on police brutality. In the latest escalation, protesters ransacked Hong Kong's parliament on the 1st of July after clashes with the police. Demonstrators wearing hard hats tore apart the outside of the Legislative Council, ripping down metal and shattering glass to get inside the building. Some protesters used a shopping cart as a battering ram, while others used metal poles and umbrellas to pry open the main entrance. Once inside, they daubed the walls with anti-government graffiti, tore down portraits of the city's leaders, hoisted a British colonial era flag in the main chamber, and sprayed the city crest with black paint. Police had to fire tear gas and baton charge the protesters in an attempt to retake control of the building hours later. So that is a background on why these protests and what shape these protests have taken. But considering we are money control, let's also take a look at its effect on the economy. The underlying factor in all this is that Hong Kong is, first and foremost, a financial hub. That is why China grants it autonomy. So how did the markets react to these massive protests? On the 12th of June, Hong Kong stock traders had a lot to contend with. A trade war between China and the US, a slumping yuan, spiking interbank rates, and street protests that spilled across the city's financial district. In that week, the spiking rates and the protests combined to snuff out a nascent recovery in the benchmark Hang Seng index after May's 9.4% dropping. May was bad for Hang Seng. May, as we well remember, was bad for the Dow as well. According to Bloomberg, the gauge tumbled as much as 2% in the aftermath when the one-month interbank borrowing cost surged to a decade high and protesters demanded the city's government drop the bill. The markets were just a tiny bit jittery at the time. Alvin Chung, an associate director at Prudential Brokerage, told Bloomberg, and I quote, "The market worries that the social unrest in Hong Kong may lead to an outflow of funds. There's a good chance the Hang Seng index will continue to decline. The progress of the extradition bill and the meeting between Trump and Xi at the G20 will be the two key factors influencing the market trend." Since then, of course, Trump and Xi have met and have called for a truce between the two countries. Mint reported that stocks fell and demand for cash had surged in Hong Kong. Financial institutions scrambled for liquid assets due to the interbank interest rates, while one-month and two-month HIBOR reached their highest since late 2008, and the one-week tenor jumped 87 basis points. But a Hong Kong Monetary Authority spokesperson told Reuters, and I quote, "The banking system of Hong Kong is safe and sound. Local banks are well capitalized and highly liquid. Their asset quality is good and their operations are strong." Unquote. He added that both the Hong Kong dollar currency market and the money markets were operating in an orderly manner. But some analysts based in the city warned that the protests added pressure, heightening concerns about capital outflows, meaning foreign capital leaving Hong Kong. Mint noted that in 2014, when the 79-day pro-democracy protests erupted, the local currency and stock market weakened initially, but rebounded in the following month. However, Alex Wong, director at Ample Finance in Hong Kong, warned in June, and I quote, "The impact was short-lived in the past, but now we're in a bear market. Sentiment was not good before this." Unquote. The latest news is that Hong Kong stocks rallied more than 2% as dealers returned from a long weekend to play catch-up with the rest of the region. The overall view seemed to be that the protests, which had turned violent, had little effect on sentiment. The New York Times reported just yesterday, and I quote, "Hong Kong's stock market was up on Tuesday, indicating little concern that the protests have crossed a worrisome red line."
Unquote. The Deep Dive podcast series.
But Hong Kong, many people would claim, has indeed crossed a red line with this extradition bill, and the once barren rock has erupted in fertile protests. It is mostly young people, and they do not want to slide back into days of clampdown on free speech. How this will evolve and whether or not this extradition bill will be withdrawn is something we will be watching out for. Do write into us to let us know what you thought of the story and if you have any other questions about these protests. mcpodcast@nw18.com or indeed leave us a comment on any of the platforms you listen to us on. Until the next time you hear from me, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.